Hello, this is your volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan, bringing you the October 27th edition of the New Yorker magazine. Today's main story is Donald Trump's Deep State Wrecking Ball by Andy Kroll. Letter from Washington. Donald Trump's Deep State Wrecking Ball, Russell Vogt, is using the White House Budget Office to lay waste to the federal bureaucracy, firing workers, decimating agencies, and testing the rule of law. By Andy Kroll. On the afternoon of February 12th, Russell Vogt, the director of the White House Office of Management and Budget, summoned a small group of career staffers to the Eisenhower Executive Office Building for a meeting about foreign aid. A storm had dumped nearly 6 inches of snow on Washington, D.C. The rest of the federal government was running on a 2-hour delay, but Vogt had offered his team no such reprieve. As they filed into a second-floor conference room decorated with photos of past OMB directors, Vogt took a seat at the center of a worn wooden table and laid his briefing materials out before him. Vogt, a bookish technocrat with an encyclopedic knowledge of the inner workings of the U.S. government, cuts an unusual figure in Trump's inner circle of Fox News hosts and right-wing influencers. He speaks in flat, nasally monotone and with his tortoiseshell glasses, standard-issue blue suits, and corona of close-cropped hair, most resembles what he claims to despise, a federal bureaucrat. The Office of Management Budget, like Vogt himself, is little known outside the Beltway and poorly understood even among political insiders. What it lacks in cachet, however, it makes up for in the vast influence it wields across the government. Samuel Bagenstos, an OMB general counsel during the Biden administration, told me, "Every goddamn thing in the executive branch goes through the OMB." The OMB reviews all significant regulations proposed by individual agencies. It vets executive orders before the president signs them. It issues workforce policies for more than 2 million federal employees. Most notably, every penny appropriated by Congress is dispensed by the OMB, making the agency a potential choke point in a federal bureaucracy that currently spends about $7 trillion a year. Shandala Young, Vogt's predecessor, told me, "If you're okay with your name not being in the spotlight and just getting stuff done, then directing the OMB can be one of the most powerful jobs in D.C. During Donald Trump's first term, Vogt, whose name is pronounced Vogt, did more than just perhaps anyone else to turn the president's demands and personal grievances into government action. In 2019, after Congress refused to fund Trump's border wall, Vogt, then the acting director of the OMB, redirected billions of dollars in Department of Defense money to build it. Later that year, after the Trump White House pressured Ukraine's government to investigate Joe Biden, who was running for president, Vogt froze $214 million in security assistance for Ukraine. The president loved Russ because he could count on him. Mark Paoletta, who has served as the OMB general counsel in both Trump administrations, said at a conservative policy summit in 2022, according to a recording I obtained. He wasn't a showboat, and he was committed to doing what the president wanted to do. After the pro-Trump riots at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, many Republicans, including top administration officials, disavowed the president. Vogt remained loyal. He echoed Trump's baseless claims about election fraud and publicly defended people who were arrested for their participation in the melee. During the Biden years, Vogt labored to translate the lessons of Trump's tumultuous first term into a more effective second presidency. He chaired the transition portion of Project 2025, a joint effort by a collective of conservative groups to develop a roadmap for the next Republican administration, helping to draft some 350 executive orders, regulations, and other plans to more fully empower the president. Despite his best thinking and the aggressive things they tried in Trump 1, nothing really stuck, a former OMB branch chief who served under Vogt during the first Trump administration told me. Most administrations don't get a four-year pause or have the chance to think about, why isn't this working? The former branch chief added. Now he gets to come back and steamroll everyone. At the meeting in February, according to people familiar with the events, Vogt's directive was simple. Slash foreign assistance to the greatest extent possible. The U.S. government shouldn't support overseas anti-malarial initiatives, he argued, because buying mosquito nets doesn't make Americans safer or more prosperous. He questioned why the U.S. funded an international vaccine alliance, given the anti-vaccine views of Trump's nominee for safety for Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The conversation turned to the United States Institute of Peace, a government-funded nonprofit created under Ronald Reagan, which worked overseas to prevent conflict. Vogt asked what options existed to eliminate it. When he was told that the USIP was funded by Congress and legally independent, he replied, "We'll see what we can do." A few days later, Trump signed an executive order that directed the OMB to dismantle the organization. The OMB staffers had tried to anticipate Vogt's desired outcome for more than $7 billion that the State Department and the U.S. Agency for International Development spent each year on humanitarian assistance, including disaster relief and support for refugees and conflict victims. During the campaign, Trump had vowed to defund agencies that give money to people who have no respect for us at all, and Project 2025 had accused USAID of pursuing a divisive political and cultural agenda. The staffers proposed a cut of 50%. Vogt was unsatisfied. What would be the consequences, he asked, of a much larger reduction? A career official answered, less humanitarian aid would mean more people would die. You could say that about any of these cuts, Vogt replied. A person familiar with the meeting described his reaction as blasé. Vogt reiterated that he wanted spending on foreign aid to be as close to zero as possible, on the fastest timeline possible. Several analysts left the meeting rattled. Word of what happened spread quickly among the OMB staff. Another person familiar with the meeting later told me, "It was the day that broke me." What Vogt has done in the 9 months since Trump took office goes much further than slashing foreign aid. Relying on an expansive theory of presidential power and a willingness to test the rule of law, he has frozen vast sums of federal spending, terminated tens of thousands of federal workers, and in a few cases brought entire agencies to a standstill. In early October, after Senate Democrats refused to vote for a budget resolution without traditional health care protections, effectively shutting down the government, Vogt became the face of the White House's response. On the second day of closure, Trump shared an AI-generated video that depicted his budget director, who by then had threatened mass firings across the federal workforce and paused or canceled $26 billion in funding for infrastructure and clean energy projects in blue states as the Grim Reaper of Washington, D.C. We work for the President of the United States, a senior agency official who regularly deals with the OMB told me. But right now, it feels like we work for Russell Vogt. He has centralized decision-making power and to an extent that he is the commander-in-chief. At the start of Trump's second term, Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, which promised to slash spending and root out waste, dominated the headlines. A gaggle of tech bros with little government experience appeared to be marching into federal buildings and, with the president's blessing, purging people and programs seen as woke or anti-Trump. The sight of Musk swinging a chainsaw on stage at a conservative conference captured the pell-mell approach, not to mention the brutality of the billionaire's plan to bring the federal government to heel. But according to court records, interviews, and other accounts from people close to Vogt, Doge's efforts were guided more than was previously known by the OMB director. Musk bragged about feeding USAID into the wood chipper, but the details of the agency's downsizing were ironed out by Vogt's office. when Doge took aim at obscure quasi-government nonprofits, such as the United States Institute of Peace, OMB veterans saw Vogt's influence at work. I can't imagine that the Doge team knew to target all these little parts of the government without Russ pointing them there, the former OMB branch chief told me. Vogt also orchestrated Doge's hostile takeover of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, crippling a regulator that Republicans had hoped to shutter during Trump's first term. Doge is underneath the OMB. Michelle Martin, an official with Citizens for Renewing America, a grassroots group founded by Vogt, said in May, according to a video of her remarks, honestly, a lot of what Elon began pinpointing was at the direction of Russ. Vogt, who declined to be interviewed for this story, voiced concerns about some of Doge's tactics, canceling budget items that the OMB had wanted to keep, for instance, but he mostly saw the department as a useful battering ram. An administration official who has worked with Vogt and Musk told me that Doge showed Vogt what was possible to ignore legal challenge and take dramatic action. He has the benefit of Elon softening everyone up, the official told me. Elon terrified the shit out of people. He broke the status quo. Vogt is a stated opponent of the status quo. One of the few prominent conservatives to embrace the label of Christian nationalist, he once told an audience that the phrasing is too accurate to run away from the term, "I'm a Christian, I'm a nationalist, we were meant to be a Christian nation." American democracy, he has said, has been hijacked by rogue judges who make law from the bench and by a permanent class of government bureaucrats who want to advance woke policies designed to divide Americans and silence political opponents. The stark reality in America is that we are in the late stages of a complete Marxist takeover of the country, in which our adversaries already hold the weapons of government apparatus, Vogt said in 2024 during a conference hosted by the Center for Renewing America, a nonprofit think tank that he also founded, and they have aimed it at us. The central struggle of our time, he said, pits the defenders of this post-constitutional order, what he calls the cartel or the regime, which in his telling includes Democrats and Republicans, against a group of radical constitutionalists fighting to destroy the deep state and return power to the presidency, and ultimately the people. Vogt counts himself as a member of the latter group, which in his view also includes right-wing stalwarts such as the political strategist Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller, the architect of Trump's mass deportations campaign. We want the bureaucrats to be traumatically affected, he said in a private speech in 2023. When they wake up in the morning, we want them to not want to go to work because they are increasingly viewed as the villains. The ultimate racial constitutionalist, Vogt says, is Donald Trump. In Vogt's view, Trump, the subject of four indictments during his time out of office, is a singular figure in the history of the American Republic, a once persecuted leader who returns to power to defeat the deep state. We have in Donald Trump a man who is so uniquely positioned to serve this role, a man whose own interests perfectly align with the interests of this country, Vogt said in his 2024 speech. He has seen what it has done to him, and he has seen what they are trying to do to the country. That is nothing more than a gift of God. As Bannon put it, sitting on stage with Vogt at a closed-door conference in 2023, Trump is a very imperfect instrument, right? But he's an instrument of the Lord. In Vogt's vision for the U.S. government, an all-powerful executive branch would be able to fire workers, cancel programs, shutter agencies, and undo regulations that govern air and water quality, financial markets, workplace protections, and civil rights. The Department of Justice, meanwhile, would shed its historical independence and operate at the direction of the White House. All of this puts Vogt at the center of what Stephen Vlaudek, a law professor at Georgetown, described to me as the Trump administration's complete disregard for the law. The president has no authority to not spend money Congress has appropriated. That's not a debate, he told me. The president has no authority to fire civil servants who are protected by statute. That's not a debate, he added. We are seeing exertions of executive power, the likes of which we have never seen in this country. Vogt, who is 49, has spent his entire adult life in Washington. He met his wife Mary on Capitol Hill, where they both eventually worked for Mike Pence, at the time a Republican congressman from Indiana. The Vogts divorced in 2023. Yet after nearly 30 years in the nation's capital, he still views himself as an outsider. He once described his upbringing in Trumbull, Connecticut, as blue-collar, and his parents as part of America's forgotten men and women. Vogt's father, Thurlow, served in the Marines and worked as an electrician. His mother, Margaret, spent more than 20 years as a schoolteacher and administrator. Before they married each other, Vogt's parents had both been widowed in their 30s and left to raise families on their own. Russ was their only child together. In 1981, when Russ was 4, one of Thurlow's daughters died in a car crash. Not long after the accident, Thurlow had a religious awakening that completely changed the direction of our immediate family, one of Vogt's half-sisters later wrote on social media. Vogt's mother helped launch a Christian school where the curriculum relied heavily on the Bible. One history book the school considered using included the instruction to defend the statement that all government power and authority came from God. America was built on Judeo-Christian values, she told a local newspaper, and if the American people gave up on those values, then they're going to have to pay the price based on sin, sickness, disease, and anarchy. Vogt attended a private Christian high school, then went to Illinois to study at Wheaton College, which is known as the Evangelical Harvard. He moved to Washington after graduation and in 1999 landed a job in the office of Phil Graham, a Republican senator from Texas. Vogt, who started in the mailroom, would later say that working for Graham laid the conservative foundation for the rest of his life. Graham was an uncompromising budget hawk. He was famous for the Dickey Flat Test, named for a printer Graham knew in Texas. For every dollar of federal spending, Graham said, lawmakers must ask themselves, did it improve the lives of people like Dickey Flat? In Graham's estimation, the answer was often no. Every year he introduced legislation designed to ruthlessly slash the budget. Years later, when Vogt testified before Congress, he said that people like his parents have always been my test for federal spending. Did a particular program or spending increase help the nameless wagon pullers across our country, working hard at their job, trying to provide for their family and future? Under Graham's tutelage, Vogt developed a reputation as a master of the arcane rules that can get legislation passed or killed. He climbed the ranks of the Republican Party, going on to advise Pence, who was then the leader of the House Republican Conference. But the closer Vogt got to the center of congressional power, the more disillusioned he became. In the late 2000s, when Republican lawmakers who professed to care about deficits and balanced budgets voted in favor of bills loaded with corporate giveaways and pork barrel spending, Vogt felt that they were abandoning their principles and duping their constituents. He later recalled of this time, I would say, if there's an opinion in this leadership room, I'm telling you it's 95% wrong. A former Capitol Hill colleague of Vogt's told me, I think he thought the Republican leadership was a bigger impediment to conservative causes than Democrats were. In 2010, Vogt quit working for House Republicans and helped launch Heritage Action for America, an offshoot of the influential conservative think tank Heritage Foundation. The foundation was known for dense policy papers and its voluminous Mandate for Leadership governing guide. Heritage Action had a different purpose, to strong-arm Republicans in Congress into acting more conservatively. Vogt was instrumental in turning Heritage Action into the interest group that congressional Republicans feared most. He picked fights with party leaders over agricultural subsidies and greenhouse gas regulations, and published a scorecard that rated how lawmakers voted on key bills. In Heritage Action's first year, according to a person familiar with Vogt's work there, He came up with an idea for a mailer that attacked Bob Corker, a Republican senator from Tennessee, for his vote to approve a nuclear weapons treaty with Russia. The mailer featured a photograph of Corker alongside images of Barack Obama, Vladimir Putin, and the Iranian leader Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Heritage Action's tactics so infuriated the Republican leadership that Senator Mitch McConnell called on Heritage donors to stop funding the group. McConnell did not respond to a request for comment. In 2013, Heritage Action announced a campaign to defund the Affordable Care Act. Votinus colleagues toured the country, whipping up the grassroots, and poured millions of dollars into advertisements and lobbying. They wanted Republicans in the House and the Senate to insist that any spending bill passed to avert a shutdown must also defund Obamacare. The Republican lawmakers who embraced the strategy came to be known as the Suicide Caucus, and their protests led to a 16-day government shutdown. In the end, Republican leaders cut a deal to reopen the government, leaving Obamacare intact. Heritage Action saw the 2016 presidential election as an opportunity to put a true conservative back in the White House. The group's CEO, Michael Needham, openly supported Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, who 3 years earlier had helped orchestrate the shutdown. Trump, at least initially, was treated with disdain. During an appearance on Fox News in 2015, Needham called him a clown who needs to be out of the race. Votin' Trump couldn't have been more different. One was a deacon at his Baptist church, the other was a twice-divorced philanderer who had been caught on camera bragging about grabbing women by the pussy. But after Trump won the election, Vot was offered a job as a senior advisor at the OMB, where he'd dreamed of working since his days in Phil Gramm's office. Years later, Vot would say at the time he had no ambition of one day running the agency. He had planned to help with the transition and some of the OMB's early efforts, then go to seminary to become a pastor. But he later said in a podcast interview, God had other plans. In March 2017, Trump signed an executive order that called for a top-to-bottom reorganization of the federal government. Mick Mulvaney, a former congressman, served as Trump's first budget director. But inside the OMB, Vot took the lead. According to a former senior staffer at the agency, Vot initially pushed for the president's plan to eliminate USAID and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. He also wanted to fold the Department of Health and Human Services, along with the food stamps program, into a new Department of Health and Public Welfare. They wanted to call it that because they think it sounds bad, a former OMB analyst told me. In one meeting, according to a person in the room, Vot said, "Why do we do economic assistance abroad at all?" The former OMB analyst said, "There were very few, if any, debates where Russ wouldn't take the most extreme option available to him, the most conservative, the most budget-cutting." Trump's cabinet secretaries resisted wholesale cuts. The former senior staffers recalled, "The general counsels at these agencies are calling the White House counsel and saying, we're not trying to introduce legislation to delete ourselves, are we?" Few of the recommendations in Vot's final reorganization plan, which was released in 2018, were implemented. But the document now reads like a guide to the second Trump administration. "I didn't realize it then," the former OMB senior staffer told me, "but I was writing the first draft of Project 2025. Vot increasingly clashed with the OMB's staff over proposed cuts to popular programs. Meals on Wheels, the food delivery program, was a topic of intense debate. Even after OMB staff explained how the program, which received more than $900 million in funding from Congress, acted as a lifeline for homebound seniors, Vot and Mulvaney pushed for major cuts that would have hobbled its operations, according to the former OMB senior staffer. The staffer added that it was often hard to reconcile Vot's deeply held Christian faith. He hosted a prayer session for select colleagues with his eagerness to cut programs that help the vulnerable. "It always struck me as a strange thing," the person said. "There's compassion, but it only extends to certain people." In 2018, Mark Paoletta, a former attorney in the George H.W. Bush White House, joined the OMB as general counsel. Paoletta was best known for publicly defending Clarence Thomas, who during a Supreme Court confirmation hearing in 1991 was accused of sexual harassment by his former colleague Anita Hill. Paoletta had worked on Capitol Hill, then entered private practice where he advised politicians under scrutiny by Congress. Paoletta and Vogt quickly forged an allegiance. The former OMB branch chief told me that the office culture changed after Paoletta arrived. "There was a shift that we were all deep state," he said. "They thought we were pushing back because we had our own leftist-leaning agenda." Paoletta declined to comment. It was Vogt's idea to use an obscure budgetary maneuver called a rescission to claw back funds that Congress had already appropriated, according to Paoletta's remarks at the Conservative Policy Summit. In 2018, at Vogt's urging, Trump sent Congress the largest rescission request in decades, asking lawmakers to roll back more than $15 billion, including money for USAID's Ebola response, the Children's Health Insurance Program, and an Energy Department loan program for auto manufacturing. "OMB employees looked at us like we were crazy," Paoletta said. "They just thought it was something they didn't do." Once again, Vogt's own party thwarted him. The measure failed by a single vote in the Republican-held Senate. Vogt also encountered resistance inside the White House. When Congress refused to give Trump billions in funding to construct new border fencing, Vogt and Paoletta devised a novel strategy. Trump could declare a national emergency at the U.S.-Mexico border, giving him the authority to seize money from other parts of the government. According to Paoletta, John Kelly, the president's chief of staff, kept the plan from Trump. Paoletta said that Kelly's message to the OMB was, "We don't want to tell the president he has that authority because God knows what he'll do." Eventually, Trump badgered Mulvaney, the OMB director, to find him the money for his wall. Mulvaney told the president that he'd been trying to meet with him about the issue, but that Kelly had blocked him. Within days, Trump replaced Kelly with Mulvaney. Vogt took over as the acting director of the OMB, and money from the Defense Department was tapped to fund the wall. Kelly did not respond to requests for comment. Under Vogt, the OMB produced budgets that called for more cuts than any in modern history. Congress all but ignored them. A former staffer in the OMB's Legislative Affairs Office recalled that Republicans didn't believe Trump called about the sweeping reductions included in his own annual budgets. They kept saying, "The president's not really pushing this or that cut. That's a Russ Vogt thing, isn't it?" the legislative affairs staffer said. In July 2019, Trump asked the OMB to freeze hundreds of millions of dollars in security assistance to the government of Ukraine. The request coincided with a phone call Trump had with President Vladimir Zelensky, in which Trump pressured him to investigate Biden and Biden's son Hunter, who had served on the board of a Ukrainian company. The money for Ukraine had already been approved by Congress, but Vogt agreed to hold back the funds. Paoletta signed off on a memo authorizing the freeze. Under the law, the move was known as an impoundment. The Government Accountability Office, an independent, nonpartisan agency, later deemed it illegal. Any fan of Schoolhouse Rock knows that the first job assigned to Congress in the Constitution is the power of the purse. The president, meanwhile, must take care that the laws be faithfully executed, according to Article 2 of the Constitution. Most legal scholars interpret this to mean that the president's duty is to spend the money Congress appropriates, and that the president does not have the power to withhold funds. In 1969, William Rehnquist, the conservative future Supreme Court Chief Justice, wrote that the impoundment power was supported by neither reason nor precedent. The question of impoundment's legality came to a head in the 1970s, when President Richard Nixon withheld billions in congressionally approved funds for environmental cleanup efforts. Courts undid Nixon's actions, and Congress eventually passed the Impoundment Control Act of 1974, which outlawed the maneuver, leaving only narrow exceptions, rescissions that required congressional sign-off. You're listening to the New Yorker magazine on Sun Sounds of Arizona, read by your volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan. Democrats are calling for restrictions on the rescission process as part of the current shutdown negotiations. Over the years, the Impoundment Control Act would come to be viewed as sacrosanct at the OMB. That didn't stop vote. I had been personally told, look, I want the money cut off until we can figure out where it's going, vote later said of the Ukraine funding in an interview with conservative commentator Tucker Carlson. It was like all hell broke loose within the bureaucracy. The impoundment triggered congressional investigations and ultimately Trump's first impeachment. Ukraine eventually received the money. Vote refused to cooperate with investigators, calling the probe a sham process that is designed to relitigate the last election. One of the impeachment articles named Vote, saying that the president had pressured him and others not to respond to subpoenas. Trump, for his part, continued to express support for impoundment, calling it the secret weapon that could tame the bloated federal bureaucracy. In early 2021, one of the final days of Trump's first term, Vote visited him in the Oval Office. Both men felt a sense of unfinished business, Vote would later recall. Only a few months earlier, when Vogt was sworn in as the OMB director, Trump had told him that, after 3.5 years as president, he had finally got the hang of the job. Russ, we've got to get another term, Trump said. We finally figured out how to do this. Vogt, frustrated by what he saw as years of obstruction by civil servants, had recently pushed through a new policy to vastly expand the number of at-will employees in the government, making them easier to fire. But the COVID-19 pandemic had dashed any chance of leaving the government smaller than he'd found it. Trump had signed trillion-dollar stimulus bills to prop up the American economy. By the time he left office, the national debt had swelled by $7.8 trillion. After the violence on January 6, the second Trump term looked less likely than ever. Vogt, however, had not given up hope. In the Oval Office, he told Trump that he would soon launch a new political operation that would keep the MAGA movement alive while attacking the policies of the incoming Biden administration. Trump blessed the venture with one request. That summer, in the wake of George Floyd's murder, national protests had forced a racial reckoning in the country. Trump wanted Vogt, who, as OMB director, had scrubbed training materials for federal employees of any reference to white privilege and systemic racism, to find a way for conservatives to push back against the Black Lives Matter movement. This was an assignment I was given from President Trump, Vogt later recalled. I'm the budget guy. If I can talk about race, you can talk about race. A few days after Trump left office, Vogt announced the launch of the Center for Renewing America, a MAGA think tank that aspired to act as an incubator for future Republican administrations. Its activist arm, Citizens for Renewing America, would mobilize grassroots supporters to pressure elected officials to embrace the think tank's agenda. The overarching goal, Vogt wrote in an op-ed for The Federalist, was to restore an old consensus in America that has been forgotten, that we are people for God, for country, and for community. At the Center for Renewing America, Vogt surrounded himself with other radical constitutionalists from the first Trump administration. He brought on Jeffrey Clark, the Justice Department official who had tried to use his agency to help Trump overturn the 2020 election. A D.C. disciplinary board recently recommended that Clark, who now works at the OMB, lose his law license as punishment for those efforts, an outcome that Clark is appealing and that his lawyer called a travesty of justice. Kash Patel, Trump's current FBI director, and Ken Cuccinelli, a top immigration official in the first Trump administration, joined as senior fellows. Working at the center, Cuccinelli explained at the Conservative Policy Summit, allowed him to stake out the outer boundary of reasonable constitutional law. The Center for Renewing America's ideas included how the president could invoke the Insurrection Act to deploy military troops to American cities to put down protests, how the White House could freeze billions in federal funding without waiting for a vote in Congress, and how agency leaders could defy government unions and fire workers en masse. The think tank also set out to create shadow versions of the OMB and of the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel to anticipate legal challenges and counter internal pushback. In his 2024 address, Vogt explained, "I don't want President Trump having to lose a moment of time having fights in the Oval Office about whether something is legal or doable or moral." Vogt and his colleagues at the center also work closely with the House Freedom Caucus to urge other congressional Republicans to use government shutdowns as a way of forcing through major policy changes. One of their first targets was critical race theory, a once obscure academic concept that once became a flashpoint during the 2020 racial justice protests. According to previously unreported recordings of briefings held by Citizens for Renewing America, Vogt said that he had pressed members of the Freedom Caucus to yoke a ban on critical race theory to must-pass bills on raising the debt limit and funding the government. "We have to have a speaker that goes into these funding fights with a love for the shutdowns," Vogt said during a November 2022 briefing call, "because they create an opportunity to save the country." But Republicans never shut down the government during the Biden presidency, and Vogt grew increasingly frustrated with them for not using more aggressive tactics. On one briefing call, he praised Cori Bush, a progressive Democrat from Missouri, after she camped out for several days on the Capitol steps to protest the end of a pandemic-era moratorium on evictions. Vogt called out her politics very, very bad, but he admired her methods. "We need this from Republicans." The centerpiece of Vogt's work during the Biden years was his campaign to popularize the concept of woke and weaponized government. The tagline brought together two of Vogt's rallying cries: woke policies like diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, and transgender rights, and a weaponized FBI and Justice Department that had allegedly been wielded against the Democrats' political enemies, including most notably Trump. When the Center for Renewing America released a federal budget blueprint in late 2022, calling for nearly $9 trillion in cuts in the course of 10 years, the word woke appeared 77 times across 103 pages. Jessica Riedel, a budget expert who works at the conservative Manhattan Institute, told me that it was just silly to claim, as the Center for Renewing America's budget did, that Veterans Affairs, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and farm subsidies required enormous cuts for being too woke. "It's a way to dress up spending cuts that aren't popular enough on their own merits," Riedel said. Vogt described his framing as an attempt to change paradigms. "We have to be able to defund agencies," he said in a private speech in 2023. "That is why these things have to be indelibly linked, and that is why we are focusing so much on woke and weaponized." Any hope that Vogt had of implementing his ideas in a second Trump administration nearly ran aground last summer. He had written a chapter of Project 2025's 887-page report, arguing for an expansion of executive power that would put the Justice Department and other traditionally independent agencies fully under presidential control. Center for Renewing America fellows had written two more chapters in the report, but as Election Day neared, Project 2025 became a liability for the Trump campaign. Polls showed that a majority of Americans opposed its most aggressive proposals, including removing the abortion drug mifepristone from the market, eliminating the Department of Education, and implementing Vogt's plan to more easily fire non-political federal workers. As criticism of Project 2025 grew, Trump insisted that he knew nothing about it, while also claiming that some of the things they're saying are absolutely ridiculous and abysmal. The months before the election, Politico reported that Donald Trump Jr. had compiled a list of people who would be allowed to serve in a second Trump administration, including a number of leading contributors to Project 2025. But according to a former Trump campaign official with close ties to the White House, Vogt definitely navigated the controversy. Russ is a consummate team player, the official told me. He was the one person at Project 2025 that we could have a conversation with during the course of the campaign. A week after Trump's victory, the president-elect announced his plans for the Department of Government Efficiency. It will become potentially the Manhattan Project of our time, Trump said in a statement. He tapped two of his biggest backers to run it, Elon Musk, who had donated nearly $300 million to help elect Trump and other Republicans, and the biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, who briefly ran for president on an anti-woke platform. 2 days after the announcement, Vogt met with Musk and Ramaswamy at Mar-a-Lago. Vogt and Musk hit it off, according to the Times. Both were on the same wavelength in terms of taking the most extreme action possible. Soon after meeting, Trump nominated Vogt to run the OMB. One of DOJ's first targets was the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The CFPB had first been proposed by Senator Elizabeth Warren, who as a law professor, argued for the creation of a regulator that could protect Americans from predatory mortgages and hidden fees. Created by law in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, the Bureau developed a reputation as an aggressive enforcer of fair lending and consumer protection laws. The Bureau's work has led to nearly $20 billion in direct relief to consumers and $5 billion in civil penalties for alleged wrongdoing. For Vogt, the Bureau embodied the gross regulatory overreach that he loathed. Outside of government, the agency's biggest foes, Wall Street and Silicon Valley, were major funders of Trump's second campaign. On February 7th, Trump named Vogt the Bureau's acting director, a role he would perform on top of his duties at the OMB. That morning, a small team of DOJ staffers arrived at the CFPB's headquarters. According to previously unreported emails and depositions, the members of DOJ took orders from Vogt as they disabled the CFPB's website and decided which of the agency's employees to fire. Musk weighed in on X, CFPB, RIP. Trump had targeted the CFPB during his first term. There were days in Trump 1 when it felt like we were getting punched in the face, one longtime employee told me. Over time, however, the president seemed to lose interest, and the CFPB's last director under Trump, a political appointee named Kathy Kreninger, supported the Bureau's mission. In 2020, under Kreninger, the CFPB filed the second highest number of enforcement actions in its nearly 10-year existence. Current and former CFPB staff told me that they assumed a second Trump administration would look like the first one. Generally, we thought there would be a conservative agenda we'd be handed, and we'd figure out how to enact it, the veteran employee said. Soon after taking over, Vogt informed Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, which funds the CFPB, that the agency would not need any more money. He barred CFPB employees from doing most types of work and told them not to go to the office. When confusion arose over what duties, if any, remained for the staff to do, Vogt clarified the matter in a February 10th email telling employees to stand down from performing any work task. In the following weeks, Vogt and Paoletta stopped oversight activities, quashed ongoing investigations, and froze active enforcement cases, which included matters involving some of the largest banks in the nation, such as J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and Capital One. Rohit Chopra, the Bureau's director under Biden, said that Vogt's actions had put the CFPB in a coma. The Bureau's top enforcement officer resigned in June, writing in a letter to colleagues that the CFPB's leadership had no intention to enforce the law in any meaningful way. The final blow came when Vogt announced a plan to lay off more than 80% of the CFPB's employees. A federal appeals court ruled in August that the mass firing plan could proceed. It took Vogt 4 months to accomplish what the previous Trump administration had been unable to do in 4 years. The unwinding of the CFPB, however, was quickly overshadowed by another vote victory. That same month, he completed his assault on foreign aid. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who had been running what was left of USAID, announced that, with Trump's approval, he had empowered Vought to effectively eliminate the agency. Russ is now at the helm to oversee the closeout of an agency that long ago went off the rails, Rubio announced. Congrats, Russ. 4 months before the 2024 election, the Center for Renewing America had welcomed a small group of congressional staffers to its headquarters, a few blocks from the Capitol. Some of them worked for the House and Senate Budget Committee, which every year helped set spending levels for the federal government. The purpose of the meeting was to brief the staffers on the center's latest policy fight, an attempt to build a case for the use of impoundment. At the briefing, Paoletta argued that the Impoundment Control Act was unconstitutional. Spending laws passed by Congress were a ceiling, not a floor. Paoletta argued, according to a person in the room, in that view, which most legal experts dismiss as a fringe position, the White House is not permitted to spend more than a law calls for, but it has the power to spend far less. Congress passes statutes episodically and often with conflicting purposes and demands, Paoletta later wrote in an essay for the Center for Renewing America. It is left to the president and his subordinates to harmonize their execution in a coherent manner. According to Democrats on the House Appropriations Committee, the Trump administration has since frozen or canceled more than $410 billion in funding on everything from energy subsidies for low-income households and Head Start after-school programs to President George W. Bush's HIV reduction initiative, PrEPFAR, and artist grants from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Vought directed the National Institutes of Health to withhold, illegally, according to the Government Accountability Office, an estimated $15 billion in grants for outside research projects. The NIH also moved to cap funding for so-called indirect costs, which research universities rely on to pay for their buildings, utilities, and administrative staff. Scientists I interviewed said that these cuts would inevitably lead to less medical research, including into a drug that Vought's ex-wife credited with improving the life of their 11-year-old daughter, who was born with cystic fibrosis. A scientist who receives government funding to study cystic fibrosis treatment told me that without sufficient money for indirect costs, we probably won't be able to do the research and will have to relinquish the grants. The OMB claims that it is vetting federal spending to ensure that the money does not fund woke programs. We can confirm that President Trump and Director Vought are carefully scrutinizing spending that has previously run on autopilot or worse toward transing our kids, the new green scam, the funding of our own country's invasion, just as the president promised, an OMB spokesperson told The Times in August. But blocking funds is also a way to pressure officials and agencies to comply with the administration's demands. OMB is like a giant funnel that everything has to go through in order to happen, Lester Cash, a former OMB employee, told me. You can get agencies to agree to things just to get the funnel to open back up. In March, the OMB took down a legally mandated public website that made it possible to track the funding freezes. The move elicited a rare show of bipartisanship. In a letter to Vought, the Democratic and Republican leaders of the House and Senate Appropriations Committee urged him to restore public access to appointment data in accordance with statute. Vought said the information listed on the site was pre-decisional and a risk to national security. The OMB restored the site only when a judge ruled that taking it down was illegal, saying that the government's position relied on an extravagant and unsupported theory of presidential power. The OMB's funding freeze have wreaked havoc. On June 30th, the Department of Education told state agencies that congressional appropriations for after-school activities and English as a second education instruction would not arrive the next day as planned. The unexpected shortfall affected thousands of school districts, which serve millions of students in all 50 states. The administration has backed down after both Democrats and Republicans criticized the move. When something's been appropriated, signed into law, and people are writing contracts based on commitments of the federal government, and then they don't know if they're going to get it or not, it creates such chaos, Don Bacon, a Republican House member from Nebraska, told me. I'm not sure what the OMB director thought he was doing. A spokesperson for Vote at the OMB would not comment on the record in response to a detailed list of questions. In June, Trump sent a rescission request to Congress, seeking to cancel roughly $9 billion in funding for foreign aid and for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which supports NPR, PBS, and other public radio and TV stations nationwide. The programs were viewed, the senior agency official told me, as soft targets to test to see if Vote could persuade Republicans to put aside their concerns about undermining Congress's power of the purse. Unlike in Trump's first term, Vote's rescission plan succeeded. The measure, which faced opposition from Democrats and a few Republicans, passed after Vice President J.D. Vance cast two tie-breaking procedural votes. Jeff Merkley, the top Democrat on the Senate Budget Committee, told me, "You've basically said to Congress, hey, compromise all you want, but we're going to undo that in the way we want as soon as you've signed the bill." On the Friday before Labor Day, Vote made his most audacious move yet. The White House sent Congress a new rescissions package, targeting nearly $5 billion in foreign aid. But this time, Vote informed lawmakers that he didn't need their approval. He asserted that the president could make the requests, putting a temporary freeze on the funds, then simply wait for the fiscal year to expire on September 30th, at which point the money would be canceled out. Vote called it a pocket rescission, but it was impoundment by another name. Susan Collins, a Republican from Maine who chairs the Senate Appropriations Committee, said that it was a clear violation of the law. The Government Accountability Office can sue the OMB over an impoundment or a pocket rescission to get the money released. In April, Jean Dorado, who leads the Government Accountability Office, testified that his office had opened 39 investigations into potential violations of the Impoundment Control Act by the Trump administration. The OMB had responded by attacking Dorado's agency. In one letter, Paoletta said the OMB would cooperate with the Government Accountability Office only if the demands didn't get in the way of Trump's agenda. In another letter, Paoletta told the Department of Transportation to ignore a Government Accountability Office ruling that found the OMB had illegally impounded money for an electric car development. Vote, for his part, had flatly declared that the Government Accountability Office shouldn't exist. Vote's actions could provoke a challenge to the Impoundment Control Act in the Supreme Court. In the meantime, a number of current and former government employees told me that they worried about the long-term consequences of what he has already done, the terminating of vital research projects that could have led to life-saving breakthroughs, the nation's lost standing as an international leader, the uncertainty cast over the fundamental workings of government. They've given up on the idea that they need to persuade anybody, Bagenstos, the former general counsel of the OMB, said of Vote and Paoletta. They're just going to use brute force and dominance. As the former OMB analyst told me, they've dropped a grenade into the system. The government shutdown has illustrated, in the starkest terms, Vote's expansive theory of executive power and his willingness to ignore Congress. On October 2nd, Trump posted on Truth Social that he would meet with Vote to decide on which Democrat agencies to cut on temporary or permanent basis. A few days later, the OMB released a memo claiming that, seemingly in defiance of a 2019 law, furloughed federal employees were not guaranteed back pay following a shutdown. Then, on October 10th, Vote announced that his campaign of mass firings across the bureaucracy had begun. So far, more than 4,000 employees have been laid off, disrupting government services devoted to, among other things, cybersecurity efforts, special education programs, substance abuse treatment, and loans for small businesses. A federal judge put a temporary stop to the cuts, but that same day, Vogt predicted that the total number of firings would be north of 10,000. As one official texted me, trauma achieved. ProPublica is a nonprofit newsroom that investigates abuses of powers. Andy Kroll, an investigative reporter at ProPublica, is the author of the book, A Death on W Street. Shouts and murmurs, we're doing child-led parenting. Caleb, I fear that my saying you broke your iPad was really blame-forward phrasing, and I might cause your feeling of shame or guilt. By Susanna Wolf. Oh, you're doing baby-led weaning? We did that too. It's really the only way to raise confident, independent little humans. That's why we decided to take it a step further and do child-led parenting. Hold on one sec. Yes, Caleb, my love, how can I help your journey? I see, yes, I understand that your heart wants to watch Paw Patrol right now, but remember you broke your iPad, so yes, you can watch on my iPad. Great problem solving. Anyway, yeah, we started with gentle parenting, but we found that we were both having difficulty maintaining boundaries. And then Derek and I realized that we're smart, capable people. And there's no reason to believe that our son isn't just as smart and capable. So we stopped enforcing boundaries. Instead, we said, Caleb is the one who needs to be parented. He should be in charge of deciding how it's done. Actually, you know what, Caleb, my darling, I'm reflecting on our previous interaction, and I fear that my saying, you broke your iPad, was really blame-forward phrasing and might cause you feelings of shame and guilt. No, you're not feeling that? Well, just to be safe, I want to revise my words so that they carry less accusation. How's this? Your iPad became broken while in your possession. That's better. Right? Yeah, you can keep watching Paw Patrol. As I was saying, it's going really great so far. Like, my sister's son has been having all kinds of tantrums. Clearly, a textbook need to assert control. And it's been driving her crazy. But we don't have these problems because our family prioritizes open and honest communication so that Caleb knows he's always in complete control. Oh, Caleb, my dearest, before, when I used the word broken to describe your iPad, it might have come off as harsh, verging on ableist. I'm so sorry for that. The words we use are important, so I vow to try harder in the future. Your iPad got an ouchie and now it's sleeping. And none of that is your fault, not even that big crack where you smacked it against the car. And that's all we have time for today. Susanna Wolf has contributed humor writing to The New Yorker since 2012. We are at the conclusion of this week's The New Yorker Magazine program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan. Thank you for joining me this week, and I invite you to join me again next week for another new edition of The New Yorker Magazine. Have a great week and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.